Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you ready for this?
Sean Merriman, a one-hand sack. Boom, 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 out go the lights.
This is Lights Out with Sean Merriman.
What's up, guys? We're back again with another Lights Out podcast with me, Sean Merriman. And today we got somebody who I call family, right? I've had a bunch of guests, even really close friends, people I've played against, people I've played with, or some people that just watched me play over the years. But this one, I'm happy to, you know, call this guy family. Someone who mentored me as a kid when I was in high school, LeVar Arrington, from the former Washington football team. When he got drafted by the team, and I was at Frederick Douglass High School in Upper Marlboro, Maryland, I convinced LeVar's younger brother to come and play high school basketball with me, and that's how LeVar and I relationship started. Was somebody who I've always looked up to and looked at as a mentor. And one of the reasons why I started off early, I give him a lot of credit because I got a chance to be around another pro and seen the lifestyle, found out how to work and read playbooks and watch film and just how to go about my everyday life. And this was at the age of 16, 17. So LeVar Arrington. What's going on, man?
Man, bro.
Are you coaching right now too, right?
All right, so I'm taking the year off because I have kids that where I would coach, I coached them last year, so they can't follow me. So I'm taking the year off, which it's man's freshman year. So I'm just watching him and watching it and the guys, and then when we get back to the other kids, their senior year, I'm gonna come back on the sideline.
So how has that been? Because You've always kind of, you know, took guys under your wing. Me being one of them, you know, as a kid and stuff like that, man. But you really just kind of got into the coaching aspect. As far as I knew you when I was growing up, and you kind of took me under your wing, it was more of like a mentorship. When did the whole coaching thing come around?
Man, I had mentored for so long, it had morphed into training. So now I was using training to like be the catalyst of me being able to mentor guys. And I was pretty good at it. So once I realized that I was pretty good at teaching, it was like kind of the next step for me to prove to myself or add to my resume was how good would I be able to take the skills that I use and training to coaching. Cause training is a lot different than coaching as well, you know? And so I actually got pulled into coaching by Antonio Pierce to Long Beach Poly, which was really cool because you go into a scenario where there is such rich culture and tradition to that program. And I coached linebackers. I assisted Claiborne as a defense coordinator with the defense schemes. But, you know, when I was sitting in the meetings and like just kind of getting into it, I was like, man, like, I start saying to myself, it's like, I could call this offense or set this offensive situation up better. Like they think because if you play one side of the ball,
that you don't know the other side. Right.
Right. And so it's kind of funny because being good at playing defense was because I was really good at playing offense. And I just applied what I did on defense to the understanding of how I played, you know, and thought on offense. You know what I mean? So it kind of went from schematically, it's like, man, I'm limiting myself. I would like to go build a program. So I was like, I'm going to fight to try to get a job. And the school I ended up going to, I got a head coaching job. And it was a small private school in Pasadena. Got my opportunity. And when I got my opportunity, we won 6 games my first year and went to the playoffs. We hosted a home playoff game. So we were good enough to host a home game. We lost. We got our heads beat in. But it was a successful season. And then we came back my second year and we had the same exact season, almost. It was 6-7 win season. And we made it to the playoffs again. Literally, Sean, I was playing with 2-3 linemen and like 19 kids. That's how small our team was. It was like not even a lot of kids. So I was like making chicken soup out of chicken, you know what? And so this last year, I had a couple really, really good young men that were aging, and we had the abbreviated year, and we went undefeated and won the league championship. So I've since stepped down because the numbers and the participation weren't good enough. The support from the school wasn't good enough to build the program. So, you know, my son is going into high school, and the kids that had came and followed me to Maranatha to come there, they needed to go to a better situation. So that's where we're at currently. But coaching, it just kind of happened.
So I never ask you this, but because you've been mentoring so many of these kids, and so many of a lot of these kids actually came around and became something like big, you know, they've done as produced.
Yeah.
Who were some of the guys? Because you played with some of the people who I watched growing up. Like you played with Bruce Smith, Armstead.
Yeah.
God, who else? Yeah.
Dion.
Dion
Sanders.
Yep.
Daryl Green, Champ Bailey.
Who was one of the guys like that? Because you mentored so many people. Like when you came in the locker room, that kind of like grabbed you up. And I remember me walking in the locker room. It was like LT, Lorenzo Neal. You know, at the time, Roman Oben had just came over too. And, you know, Jamal Williams, Randall Godfrey, Donnie Edwards. So I walked in the locker room full of guys that were in the league 10 plus years. And so who was that for you on your team?
Yeah, those some good names. When I came into the league, probably prime. But I would say Marco Coleman was probably the one that had the biggest influence on me in terms of just how I handle things as you know, pro. He was an OG by the time I had came in, and he definitely, his locker, they put me next to his locker. He was always, you know, chew some gum, calm down, like chew some gum. That was his thing. Like I'd be like so tightly wound up. I'd be breathing all hard. He'd be like, just get in here, take this piece of gum, chew the gum, bro. Like, relax. And he was an OG off the field too. So I learned a lot about how to handle things off the field. A lot of the things I did, I learned to do it in house. Don't go anywhere. I corrupted you in so many ways with early, just how my home was, just the environment that was there from things in my house, like Marco, and you know, is have fun at your crib, be safe, secure, and really position yourself where you don't have to have any regrets about, you know, the times that you're having. And that was one of the quickest lessons that I learned when I got to the league. But I'd say Sean Barber was a pretty good, he was a dope friend. I won't say he was a mentor. We were like brothers and how close we were when I got in. I learned a lot from him organically. But I would say Marco Coleman was probably the one that had the biggest influence on me in terms of just how I handle things as you know, pro. Why are you smiling, man?
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Because I want to add up, because you know what? I want to ask you something about Barbara with the car.
All right, good.
Is it cool?
How you know about that?
I know about everything.
So he borrowed my 360 Medina. I was out of town. He borrowed my 360 Medina and wrecked it. Wrecked my car.
I never knew. So, you know, I was around, but I wasn't like around when it happened. But I think I might have been around Stephen Davis or what. It was one of the guys I was around, and I was a kid. I was young. I was like probably 16, 17 at the time. And so I heard he had Barbara had borrowed your car. And so that's true. That's 100% that happened.
Yeah. he borrowed the car, drove it, I believe, to Richmond, Virginia. But we were this tight. Now, we were tight enough where he could go get my keys and knew where my keys were and take my car. So he drove the car to Richmond. I think on his way back, he wrecked my ride.
I honestly kept it. It's when you brought up his name, I wanted to ask that story because I was young then, and
that's a true story.
Man, that's crazy. That's crazy. There's no way in hell. You're a lot better than me because there's no way in hell I would have.
We was tight. You were around me, so you know how I was. Like I just you know, if you was in my circle, I loved you. It is what it is. Like, I just take it at face value. Now, if it was somebody different, it would have been some smoke. You know, Big Dre and them might have been up in there, had the dude yoked up for me while I pointed at him and touched him on his chest and told him what's going to happen to you right now. But so it was like, I was more happy he was okay, more so than anything else. Like, you all right, you know? Now get my car fixed, you know what I mean? And we went from there. But yeah, that's a true story.
Dude, I always wanted to ask you. It's funny you said that, but when you brought his name up, it's the first thing I started thinking about. Let me add, because we, you know, a couple of minutes, I want to ask you something about the whole Simone Biles thing, because I tweeted something the other day about you know, mental health, which I don't know about you, Vaughn, man, but when I retired, especially when you do it from an injury, because it's crazy, man, how our, you know, kind of stories and paths have matched up in a lot of different ways.
Are very similar, yeah.
Because of the injuries and having, coming off of the highs and being known as the best at what you do, then get injured and not really kind of finding your way again. For me, when I retired, that first year or two was kind of rough, and I had plenty of things lined up to do. It's just that I felt like I had more and I was never able to get to do that more. And that was me personally. So, you know, that the whole depression things there, the anxiety, the stress, everything. But I tweeted something the other day about Simone Biles about, you know, mental health is important, but so is mental toughness. So, you know, to me, it wasn't a big thing. I looked and it got retweeted like 13,000 times or something, or like 13,000 times, retweeted 3,000 times. And, you know, I had a bunch of negative ass comments. And for me, I don't really care. You know, we cut from a different cloth.
Of
where we're not sitting around worrying about what nobody's saying. We're going to say what we say.
Right. Your opinion is your opinion.
It's your opinion. And everybody got to respect that, you know, and I come from a side of respect somebody else's opinion, even if I don't believe in what they're saying. But I feel like personally that if I wasn't mentally tough, we couldn't be doing this right now because I wouldn't have been here. You know, I wouldn't have been in a position to even continue on because, you know, so many things happen to all of us. Everybody got their own different story, whether it's injury or something happened to you as a kid or something that we all deal with. But I just simply made the statement of being mental health. It obviously is very important because, you know, I'm a big, I do hot yoga. I meditate and do stuff. Even now when I go and do my MMA and boxing and stuff, it's still a form of meditation for me, period. So I believe in mental health. It's a very important thing, but also I'm not going to let anybody use that as a crutch. And I see that nowadays, in my opinion, I'm seeing a lot of that being used as a crutch as opposed to somebody saying, you know what, I'm just having a tough time right now. This is life. This happens in life, man. What do you feel about that?
I think there's a fine line that exists there between the whole idea of having mental toughness versus understanding what the mental health and the value of the mental health is. In Simone Biles' case, I feel like the fact that she had to come out and be the one that was having the conversation about it was incorrect, right? It just tells you how far behind people are in terms of understanding how serious mental health is. It's not more so, because when you think about mental toughness is more so you digging deep and finding a way to continue on. It would be more comparable to say, imagine if you had to play a game with a fully ruptured Achilles tendon or a fully ruptured ACL. You know what I mean? Like have the mental toughness to get up and go back out there and finish the game. That to me is the equivalent of mental health. So for her to be in a situation where she had to pull herself out, for her to have to give the explanation. It just continues to show that we're still not to the place of where we need to be to understand how exactly to approach mental health. You can have 5-6 different people come out there if she breaks her arm or breaks her leg while she's competing, and they'll check her physically and they'll cart her off, and everybody will have closure on her not competing because you were able to visually see why she can't compete. And that's been like the age old argument with mental health is you can't see mental health. You can see it when it's not there, when it's not present by the way people do things, but you can't see it in general. Like, think about with Junior, like, you know, you wouldn't be able to see that he was dealing with things emotionally and mental health wise because he was too dope of a dude. Like, you too busy admiring dude, but he's sitting there and all of the mental health injuries that he had that probably needed like surgery, you never address it. All the injuries that you sustained during your career, you were able to get the physical aspect of your body together, but they never addressed your mental. They never did a diagnostic deal or did mental rehab on you. And if somebody approached us to do it, it's so foreign to us. We look at it like, I'm not crazy. I don't need mental health assistance. I'm good. I feel strong. I'm getting my body back together. But now I think that things are changing in a way where the conversation has to be had that if you can spend millions of dollars on a training facility for lifting weights or a training facility for physical rehab, why can't you put millions of dollars and you know, commitment into the mental health rehab as well? You should be able to go in there and you should be able to do the same type of exercises that get you physically ready to go. You should be able to go to a place that mentally gets you ready to go as well. It's like we are patched up, we are fixed, and we are put back on the field. And the only time that the mental health issues become real issues is once we're retired. So now those mental health issues come out and it's like we were never getting them fixed. So it's like compiling a whole bunch of physical injuries through the years and never addressing them. You know, there should have been support in terms of how Simone Biles was withdrawn, how it was handled. Was what made it kind of, it comes down to interpretation. Like when we hear athletes say, it's up to us to create an interpretation and have an opinion of it. But if a trainer would have came out and said, like, look, this is what's going on. She has to deal with this, da, da, da. We'll give you an update. And just like how they do in sports on anything else, we'll give you an update as it unfolds. We got to do some evaluating, da, da, da. We'll reevaluate it and then we'll get back to you. That's really how it should have been handled, honestly speaking. But the fact that we don't pay attention to it the way that we need to, it played out, in my opinion, from the jump, it played out the wrong way.
No, 100%. Hey, Var, man, I appreciate you, man, for just stopping in real quick. And then
my God,
one of these days we gotta do a long hour just on just all this, man, just in general. Because I do think there's a direct correlation with a lot of this stuff. And obviously, you know, we talk all the time, but maybe getting an opportunity to share some of this information with people out here, and you know, you don't know who's listening, who it's gonna help.
We're gonna make a difference, man. It's coming. The time is coming. We just gotta keep grinding. It's gonna happen.
Yeah, 100%, bro. Love you, man. Appreciate it.
Love you too, boy. All right.
Thanks, guys, for listening to another Lights Out podcast with me, Sean Merriman. And that was awesome, man. We could have probably went another 45 minutes to an hour. But we had a lot of stuff to cover. LeVar's, you know, been a great mentor to others, and now a great coach. And his work ethic has always been undeniable. So thank you guys for listening to another Lights Out podcast. Me, Sean Merriman, and we'll be back again soon.